Blog Talk Radio.
Another great show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Think, Believe, and Manifest Show with author, master trainer, and certified dream coach, Constance Arnold. Join us every week as we bring you life-changing information that will empower your life. And here's Constance.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Law of Attraction Radio Network. And I am Constance Arnold, your host for the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show. And I am broadcasting live today from sunny but a little cold Atlanta, Georgia. And, you know, I want to welcome all of my listeners from all over the world. Now I think it's 121 countries. And as I always say, I believe that if you are listening to this show today, that the Spirit of God has attracted you here today, and you will receive encouragement, inspirations, and solutions for your life. Well, I am doing great. It is a beautiful, sunny, a little cold here in Atlanta, Georgia, but I'm really grateful to have all of you listening, and I have a couple of questions for you. Can you believe it is already at the end of January, and how is your life coming? Have you reached those written goals that you set for this month? So I want you to always monitor that and always make sure that you have clear written goals for each month so that manifestation can occur in your life rapidly. Well, today I am so honored to have with me a legend, an icon, one of the most listened to authors and experts in the field of personal and career success, the one and the only Dr. Dennis Waitley. And so I want you to listen to this quick commercial, and when I return, are you ready for Dr. Dennis Waitley?
Hello, this is Constance Arnold, your success coach. Do you feel stuck? Are you ready for change in the areas of business, relationships, or career? Then contact me today for your complimentary coaching session. We will partner together to develop individualized strategies and projects that will move you towards the life of your dreams. So email me at constance@fulfillingyourpurpose.com. Or visit my website, fulfillingyourpurpose.com, and discover and take advantage of the diverse coaching packages that I have designed just with you in mind.
The University of Attraction. Where else can you take free, interactive courses from international scientists, medical doctors, spiritual leaders, and experts in the field of the Law of Attraction? At the university, you will have your personal questions answered, enhance your intuitive skills, communicate with the angels, fill your life with music, and free meditation and hypnosis downloads. Sign up today. Go to loaradionetwork.com and click on the University of Attraction. The doors are wide open, waiting for you now.
Hello, this is Constance Arnold, author and certified dream coach. Join me beginning January 26th for 4 weeks as I share with you how to make your dreams come true in 2011. You know, during my career, I have helped over 10,000 clients begin to live the life of their dreams. I will teach you how to develop strategies and projects that will move you towards your dream, utilizing a simple, easy, effective process for rapid change. You will learn how to identify and eliminate those limiting beliefs that have been holding you back from the life that you deserve. This is your opportunity to jump into the driver's seat and take control of your life. So register today at the University of Attraction and begin the first steps toward making your dreams come true.
Well, I'm going to encourage all of you to make sure that you go to the University of Attraction. I conducted my first class this week, and I'm teaching on how to make your dreams come true for 4 weeks. And as the commercial shared with you, we have Dr. Serena Pillay from Harvard, and we're all experts, and we're here to share with you life-changing information that will really change your life this year. Well, are you ready for my special guest today? You know, honor is something that is really missing in our society today, but today I really want to honor this great man, this living legend, icon, and so I'm going to read his extensive bio. Dr. Dennis Whately is a best-selling author, speaker, poet, and productivity consultant on high performance, and is one of the most listened to voices on personal and career success. Over the past 40 years, he has sold over 10 million audio programs translated into 14 languages. He is best known for his outstanding program, The Psychology of Winning, and is the author of 16 nonfiction books, including several international bestsellers, Seeds of Greatness, Being the Best, The Winner's Edge, and Empires of the Mind. He was also a featured guest in the hit movie The Secret. He's worked with Olympic gold medalists, Super Bowl champions, Apollo astronauts, Fortune 500 top executives, returning POWs, heads of state, boardroom of top multinational corporation, and classrooms of students of all ages and cultures. And I am certainly one of his students. I listened to The Psychology of Winning for years. And as I shared with him prior to coming live, I believe that a lot of the information that he shared with me has really helped to form who I am today. And it is an honor for me to welcome Dr. Dennis Whately to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Well, thank you, Constance, very much. And, you know, the best teachers are supposedly the best students. So now I'm your student and eager to learn from you. And that's maybe why I'll continue to have information to share with people, because you never want to stop learning.
Well, how interesting. So you're calling from Mexico, is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, a little beautiful oceanfront place, about an hour and a half drive south of San Diego. So I'm enjoying very much watching the whales. The whales are all heading down to the point of Baja to have their little whale children, and then they come back up later, about late January, February. So we watch them go down, and I use this time because it's easier to write and think in that kind of environment, and I'm hoping to write a new book and, of course, continue to teach, because I think that's what keeps you young, is that you're always engaged in something that helps other people.
Well, interesting. So, Dr. Whately, for our listeners who may not know you, briefly share a little bit about your life and your work and some of the findings that you've had over the years about success and winning.
Well, you know, I was raised in a modestly poor family. My dad never earned over $200 a month, and he left home when I was 9. And I became the little man of the family at that age, and we had a sister and a brother, and I tried to take care of business. He came back briefly when I was about 15, just long enough to say that because we didn't have any money, that maybe I should go to a service academy because it was free and the Korean War was upon us at that time. So I managed to work hard and study hard and and be accepted to the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis, and graduated and became a carrier-based TAC pilot at Miramar. So I served 5 years as a pilot in the Navy, and I learned from that experience that perseverance, but goal setting, is very important, because if you don't know where you're going to fly, if you don't know how long it takes you to go out and come back, and one of the great lessons about that is when you're flying off a carrier in the middle of the ocean, and let's say the carrier is going 30 knots and the wind is going a certain direction, the tide is moving, and you're flying out toward the China coast at 500 miles an hour, 50 feet above the water, so you won't be detected. Then the carrier turns off its radar homer, so you have no idea how to get back from where you came unless you compute where you've gone, how long you've been there, and where the ship is likely to be upon your return. And I realized that without a target and without tracking to the target, meaning correcting for the variances that happen, you know, things happen on your way to your goals and you need to make adjustments. But if you always keep the target in your mind, then you can make those adjustments by using corrective feedback. And I logged that experience as a Navy pilot, and then from there was lucky to work with returning prisoners of war from Vietnam, because I'd had an experience as a Navy pilot, and then going on to get a doctorate in psychology, I learned that the mind, when you're a prisoner of war, for example, you have nothing to do but think. And since we know from the law of attraction that thoughts become things, what you're thinking about, even though you can't accomplish physically what you want at the time, a prisoner of war would have to project himself back home. He'd have to pray that he was going back home. He'd have to be grateful for what he had. And he had to be constantly thinking about where he was going rather than his position, which was a prisoner, or rather than the bad luck or misfortune that caused him to be where he is. So that experience with the prisoners of war and with being a Navy pilot moved on. And so I wrote my doctoral thesis on why no American prisoner ever escaped from a minimum security camp. And this may not sound much like something that you'd listen to or would be identified with goal setting, but I found that only the prisoners in a maximum security camp, where there was lots of guard dogs and barbed wire and people watching you and beating you and challenging you, they tried to make sure that the leaders were beaten down, because they knew they'd try to figure a way to get home and escape. Whereas in a minimum security camp, where you were wishy-washy, where you didn't know what your goals were, where you didn't know what your country's mission was, it was easy to turncoat you and change your belief system because you didn't have one. And they found that the people who didn't have a strong spiritual belief, the ones that didn't have specific ideas about their future, were the easiest to turncoat and to, if you will, brainwash into a different way of thinking. So when I did the POW stuff, I decided that instead of prisoner of war, it would be psychology of winning. So I used the POW metaphor for that and decided that I would devote my life to taking the prisoners that we are of our own thoughts and of our environment and turning it into a psychology of action, where you're always moving in the direction of where you want to go instead of where you're coming from. And that led to the good fortune of the album, which at the time became a bestseller, and that opened up the door for me to speak. And during that same period, I had worked with the Apollo program, because the astronauts were preparing to go to the moon, and no one had ever gone there before, so they had to work it out in their minds first. And you can stop to think just for a minute. What if you were asked to go 250,000 miles up and back in a vehicle that had been built by the government, in a vehicle that had never had anything in it before to go and come, and yet it worked out on paper because you designed it that way? What was Neil Armstrong to think? Was he to think, I hope they get me back, or what a risk this is? But because they had done so much planning, training, rehearsing, that it worked out just like drill. And that's why I think that if you do it right in drill and practice, you'll do it right in life. The album hit, and I started writing books, and I had another good fortune to be made chairman of psychology for the Olympics, which meant that instead of worrying about problems that Olympians had, we worked out a program to help them enhance their performance so they would not only visualize, but use guided imagery and use a method of habit training so that an Olympian could win inside their minds, which at the world-class level is where everybody wins. Everybody has talent, but the question is, at the moment when you must compete in a fraction of a second, what is your thought process? Are you releasing, relaxing, and letting go? Are you letting everything you've learned pull you forward, or are you beginning to get distracted? And those experiences, combined with being part of the movement where Zig Ziglar and Norman Vincent Peale and Robert Schuller and all the great speakers, I went to school on all of them, and they became my best friends, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful ride for me, and I'm going to sprint to the finish.
Oh, that's really great. You know, as I shared with you earlier, I've listened to The Psychology of Winning, I don't know, maybe hundreds of times. What are some basic principles from that program that you can share with my listeners? How do winners think? What are their habits? What about how do winners take action steps?
Well, those are very good questions, Constance, and I think that's really one of the secrets to it all is, in the first place, I've never met anyone better than anyone else, and I'll couch that by saying that everyone is an uncut gemstone of potential. So when we were created, we were given this carbon. I mean, we're all made up of the same elements anyway, so we're given this potential. And one of the things in life to do is to recognize that your own potential is as good as anyone else's. And that's a difficult thing because we compare ourselves against the celebrities and sports heroes, and we don't feel as good looking or as high performance or as adequate. So we're constantly worrying about the way we appear. So I think the first thing in the psychology of winning would be the awareness that I'm as good as the best, but no better than the rest. And I say that meaning that I have as much potential in me to fulfill myself as anyone else who's born. But at the same time, I don't want to judge myself on how many points I score. Because here's the problem. If you only judge yourself on material points, you're going to be very, very disappointed as you age and as you understand that it's more what you share and building other winners than it is what you achieve materially for yourself. So that first step is believing in the abundance of your own potential and then saying, wait a minute, given my parents and my background, you're saying that I should be glad I'm me. You're saying that I'm as good as the best, but not necessarily better than the rest. You're saying that I shouldn't compare myself with others unless I'm using high-performance standards like Olympic standards or world-class standards, so that I can see a standard of excellence, a benchmark, and then I can compare my achievement against that but not try to beat other people or to win by losing. So I think the very first thing is to say, okay, I've got potential, and I'm worth investing in. I'm worth educating. I'm worth learning. I'm worth meeting good people. I'm worth the effort that I'm going to put in, because if you don't have that going in, you won't study, you won't try, you won't see any value, you won't see the American dream or whatever dream your country has. So that's number one. The second is to believe that the value in your potential is just as important as the value in your performance, because you must feel the inner value before you'll make the effort to perform. So don't base your belief in yourself on what you've done so far, because it takes some of us, me especially, it took me a long time. I was very shy. I was insecure. My father had left. I didn't think I was that good. I was not that good looking, not that great an athlete, you know, not good enough. And you must get beyond that, because if you don't, you will constantly make excuses for being mediocre. So I think number one, aware of your potential. Number two, belief in potential rather than being stuck with performance. In other words, let's say you don't have any money. Does that make you worth less? Well, everyone didn't have money at one time. So in order to get money, you have to believe that it will flow to you because the service you provide will be in demand by people who you will want to help. I think that the very most important issue, though, to me has always been, I don't think people understand the power of habits. I don't think they understand that most of what we do is habitual. We get up, we read USA Today, we do our email, we like the friendly ones first. We work on easy things first and important things we put off. We get in the habit of doing things over and over again, and pretty soon it becomes the track on which we run our lives. The things we think become a software. So the software has a track to it, and it drives the hardware. So I think the habit of excellence, or the habit of winning, is developed by listening to programs like this, reading books, associating with people who have similar goals, not necessarily similar problems. Now, I know similar problems are good because there's safety in numbers, but it would be better to associate with people who have recently overcome the problem that you've shared rather than people who are commiserating and wallowing in their problem. That's why you want to hang around with people who are recently employed, recently have overcome a health issue, recently have overcome an emotional issue, recently have become, you know, better associated, and so on. And so a habit doesn't just take 21 days. It may take 21 days or 3 weeks to learn the keyboard a little better and to maybe do things more reflexive. But if somebody would listen to your program religiously for a year, after that year, they would be like an astronaut or an Olympian in the sense that they would be daily running on a new track. They'd be thinking of new things. And in my belief system, it takes about a year for you to overcome the old message, the old tapes, the old CDs, and it takes a year of new behavior so that the old behavior doesn't jump up and it's called recidivism, doesn't make you go back to drugs, doesn't make you go back to drinking, make you go back to feeling negative. So if you give a year of positive training around coaches and mentors and successful people, I believe that will start a person on a track where they will not go back to the old way of life. So habits are, it's very important to think and to be your best coach and friend, to always be reinforcing in your thoughts, to when anything negative comes, you have to say, that's not like me, I'm better than this, let's get going, and to use that kind of, if you will, self-transformation with the help of others and with the help certainly of prayer and using greater power than you to get yourself on a winning track. But I think one of the secrets is persistence, perseverance, and a daily dose of keeping away from the old neighborhood so that you won't get paroled and then be put back in your POW, prisoner of world.
Oh, that's just awesome information, Dr. Whately. You were a featured guest in the hit movie. When I saw you in the movie, I just screamed. I was so excited to see that you were included in that. And you talk about the law of attraction and visualization. So what can you share with my listeners about the law of attraction? What is it? How can we implement it in our lives? And what about visualization?
Well, I think those are really good points, and a lot of people are confused. I know I have been. I've been lucky to be able to see it, for example, in an astronaut or an Olympian or someone who's overcome a health problem. But I strongly believe that the universe operates on laws, like laws of physics. And for every action, there is an equal and opposed reaction in some way. And there is, first of all, the law of attraction is certainly based on the unfailing boomerang. Whatever you are projecting in thought becomes real because thoughts are the only things that human beings have in order to make what they want happen. Everything else was created by our Creator. So all of the elements and all of the sea, the ocean, the trees, the world was created, and then we have to create our world in our thoughts. So everything that was invented by a man or a woman was first a thought, whether it was an architect laboring over something, whether it was an inventor sitting wondering or a scientist pondering, thoughts become things. And that's why I use the unfailing boomerang, which is whatever I throw out in the things I think and the actions I take come back to me full circle and in many respects more powerful than the action that I took in the first place. For every little white lie that I may have told, a hurricane comes back to me from that lie that at the time in my life when I most need credibility, whatever I was fudging or lying comes back to haunt me just when I need the credibility for people to believe that I'm real rather than a phony. And so whatever I think, it becomes a thing, and it becomes very real. And so the law of attraction is the unfailing boomerang of cause and effect. And there's enough abundance for everyone in the world. We don't need to be stingy or don't need to take from other people. the law of synergy, which is part of the law of attraction, says that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and also that it's better to work with people than against people. In other words, to flow out things that are helpful to others that come back, because the universe is based on synergy, every planet and every star. And I was watching National Geographic the other night and saw that every living thing in our world gravitates because of the sun. So the sun causes all life because it provides the nourishment for every living thing. So I figure, okay, the abundance is already there. It was given to us. The synergy means that I'm going to work with, and I'm going to make sure that I'm in harmony rather than in dissent. Then I'm going to take the law of attraction as being cause and effect. For every choice that I make, there's a consequence or reward of that choice, and I know it's going to be pretty much in kind, maybe even greater. So what should I do? And then I realize that I need to use the law of increase, and I talked briefly about that before. Because all living things gravitate toward the sun, and if you look at a rainforest, everything in the rainforest tries to get above this umbrella and touch a little of the sun. The way the world is set up is that every living thing wants to increase itself to its full potential, and that includes men, women, and children. So let's say that you and I use the law of attraction and made our mission in life to increase the life of every thing and person that we met, every flower, every tree, every animal, every little boy, little girl, every person that we met, we somehow wanted to increase their lives, knowing that that's their primary drive in life, is to increase themselves to their full potential. I believe that if you live that way and people know that you're not trying to exploit them, manipulate them, have power over them, that you're sincere about increasing their lives, your life will be increased so much because they will seek you. They will always want to be around someone who increases their life. And finally, the main part of the law of attraction becomes the law of gratitude, which is think and thank. You know, I'm so grateful. You know, my mother was complained her whole life. She was not a happy woman. She had reasons to think that the world was unfair, and she laid that upon the children. But I always thought that to be thankful for her giving me life, to be thankful that I could help her later in life, to be thankful that I can breathe, that I can see, that I can walk. And I live that way today. I'm so grateful for everything that's happened that I try to be a gratitude person rather than thinking what I lack. I'm grateful for what I do have, and it makes me much happier, more fulfilled. And I think that all goes together. But the last little, if you will, epilogue on that is that the law of attraction does take action. And just because I see the BMW in my driveway does not mean it's going to come there, because although I have created it exactly what I want in my mind, I must give the person that now has that BMW something of value. I must increase their life in some way so that that will be driven into my driveway, and so I must give them more in value than I receive in payment. So I live to give value so that when I receive the payment, that I'm trying to give more than I take, and that way you'll really get that BMW or anything else you want.
Well, that's just powerful information. Well, if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Dr. Dennis Waitley, best-selling author, speaker, poet, and productivity consultant. And Dr. Waitley, about regarding money, should a person seek money or seek to be successful or seek wealth, or should they seek to serve?
I really believe they should seek to serve. I think that, of course, everyone wants to be financially secure. We know that Social Security is an oxymoron, just like, jumbo shrimp or things like that. We know that there's no security that's going to be provided to us by somebody else, that we are responsible for that. So we think about that, and we're concerned about it. We're concerned about the debt and about earning and about our jobs. But it's better to have the passion. If you have the passion and are always seeking to chase your passion, not your pension. If you chase your passion, if you do something that you're good at, something that you love, and something that will benefit other people in some way that they will want what you have, you will always be paid and sought after for that passion. And that's why it's so important to let money chase you, but don't chase money. And that means if you're always keeping the level of your learning and yearning ahead of your earning, your service will always be ahead of payment. And believe me, in this economy and every economy to come, people will be attracted to those people who are paid less for the tremendous value that they provide. Who wouldn't want someone who is giving so much value that they didn't want to let them go? They didn't want them to go off and build their own business. They wouldn't want them to leave and do something else. So they do everything they could to keep that person. It would be like a franchise player, a player on a team that was so valuable that they'd be an MVP to the team, and so you'd always want that person. So I think that if you can keep the talents that you were blessed with, and you discover those by thinking about what you did well after school and what you love to do in your free time, and you can pretty well decide that you can bring your hobby or your talent to work for you. And then if you'll find a service that passion can be administered through, a service, I believe the payment will come. In my case, I have never thought about money. I have never thought about how much I was going to be paid. I have never had to hold up products in the back of the room. I've never wanted to count the audience as a number of customers. And in that way, maybe I haven't made quite as much money as some, but the abundance has flown because I was more interested in passionately serving than I was in getting a reward. I wasn't using the Roman approach, something for something. Instead of saying, what are you going to do for me, and tell me what you're going to do for me, and I'll tell you what I'll give you, I would always say, here's what I'm going to do for you, regardless of the payment. Because if after a while I think it's unfair, I'll do something else. But in the meantime, I'll always give my best, and then see if you will return that in kind. But I will not demand that in advance, because then I'm not living up to my stewardship.
Well, what about the law of self-fulfilling prophecy? What is that?
That's really a good one. S.I. Hayakawa was one of the creators of the self-fulfilling prophecy. He finally became a United States Senator from California and then used to fall asleep during the Senate meetings. But Hayakawa said that the self-fulfilling prophecy is a statement which is neither true nor false, but becomes true when you believe it. So a self-fulfilling prophecy is a belief system or expectation that may not have any real basis of fact at the time, but if you expect it, you will more likely get what you expect than what you want in life, because expectation equals motivation. You will never be motivated to do anything you don't expect to be able to achieve. So you won't expect to win if you don't think you're worth winning. You won't expect success if you don't think you deserve success. So self-fulfilling prophecy is, it's what we expect to happen more than what should happen that counts. And that's why it's so important for your belief system to be focused on the reward of success instead of the penalty of failure, and on the desired result instead of what might happen that would make it go wrong.
Well, you know, a lot of my listeners, I get a lot of emails, Dr. Whately, and they talk to me about should I look at television, what should I be listening to, should I really limit how much time I spend on the Internet. What could you say to my listeners about what they listen to and what they look at and what they hear?
Well, of course, as you get older, you realize how much time has been with tension-relieving rather than goal-achieving activities. So let's focus on that. Are you tension relieving or are you goal achieving? Tension relieving means that you want to disconnect from what happened during the day because it was monotonous, you weren't getting anywhere, you were a little bored. And so what you want to do as soon as you can is you want to, if you will, veg out and get away from the day. And that's fine because you do need variety. But here's the problem. When we come home from drudgery or the same routine, the habits that we've gotten into, we have a new habit. And the new habit is turning on the tube or going to the internet and watching things that are tension relieving, which means you can play games, you can play tic-tac-toe, you can watch reality shows, you can watch Idol, which are fun, and some of the other things. But what we're really doing then is we're giving up prime time. And prime time is 6 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which means that that's when the ratings are the highest because everyone's watching. Well, everyone is watching other people making money, having fun in their professions. And when you stop to think of it, why would you spend your life watching other people enjoying what they're doing and they're earning a great deal of money because you're watching them and their ratings are high? And so they love to have you watch. And most people then subordinate their lives to celebrities, and they do the wave in the stands with, and we all do that, but I mean overly do it. So what's worked for me is to make sure that the evenings, which should be spent with friends and family, which should be spent thinking and having the luxury of the one time of day that you can think about your goals, that you can write emails that benefit you, that you can write 2 pages of a chapter of a book. And in saying that, I would have to say that most of the 16 books that I have written have been written from 6 to 11 p.m., Monday through Friday, while other people are watching television. I'm writing. Why? Because I want to live in prime time rather than watch in prime time. So you listen to your show, you read books that have a message in them. They're usually a message of hope. Sure, I read some books that I take on vacations that are Hannibal Lecter once in a while, and I read The Dark Side, which we all do, but for the most part, I'm spending my time talking with people who are important, my family, networking with people who can help me, the friends and colleagues, writing, which is part of my future, working on my life rather than whiling it away. And I don't know what would have happened to me if I would have spent the evenings watching television for the last 30 years. I'm positive I would never have written a book. I would never have learned enough to be in demand by anyone. So that's why I say National Geographic, I watch. Animal Planet, once in a while. History Channel, sure. In and out of the news just to see what's happening, of course. But I can get that on the internet quickly in the morning. And so I think it's a mantra that we need. Goal achieving, not tension relieving. Live in prime time. Don't watch in prime time.
That's so awesome. My goodness. You talked about goal setting. Should my listeners write their goals? And how important is that? I know a lot of my listeners say, well, I have my goals just in my head. I don't need to write them down. What about the power of written goals?
Well, you know, and I know, and it's been going on since the beginning of recorded time. You can't go into a bank. You can't go into a business relationship without a written contract where you're telling the bank how you're going to pay them back. So they want you to sign an agreement to that effect. You go in and sit down with your attorney and you make out promises and contracts, and you put it in writing and you sign it. And it has so much more power than, sure, you should be able to do a handshake and you should be a person of your word. But the power becomes in making that commitment so that you can see it, you can read it, you can imagine it. And of course, we didn't get into the visualization part, as you asked, but what you visualize, you will realize. And that's why the mind can't distinguish between what is vividly imagined and what is real. The more they vividly imagine something, the more it becomes part of their belief system. And as you know, many people in the world believe things that simply aren't true, but they believe them because they have visualized them and it becomes real to them. So imagination plus internalization equals realization. And that's why the Olympic athletes, for example, they use guided imagery because it locks in to their subconscious a neural pattern. And the neural patterns give them the golf swing again. And so if you play golf, fair enough. But what if you're slicing and hooking all the time? Wouldn't it be better to learn from an expert, have the expert help you correct, and then always be visualizing and internalizing the correct swing? Why would you visualize the mistakes that you made before and that it's likely to happen again? This would put you in a trap or make you a duffer. But if you learn from, you have to learn the correct swing. You have to find somebody who's been where you've been before. You have to learn the right moves and the right way to think. And then you need to constantly correct, but always toward what you want, never away from what you don't want. Because it's very hard to not be fat, it's very hard to not be late, very hard to not be angry, but it's much easier to be thin and trim, to be this or that, and so you want to go for that. And that's why, again, putting them down in writing gives you a track to run on. Companies do it. Why would a company do it? Why do they have quarterly reports? Why do they have these plans? Because it goes according to the plan. If NASA would have said that we're going to send Neil Armstrong to the moon and we just know it and we know what to do, but that was all documented and that made it real. The more specific that you are, the more likely you are to achieve it. And that's why you don't want to say, I want to be better, I want to get rich, I want to be healthy, I want peace. Your brain works like the most marvelous biocomputer ever created, and it wants facts. It wants numbers, and it wants dates, because the brain knows that if you don't put any emphasis on it, it will discard it and throw it away as not being important. But if it's very important to you, important enough to write down and look at, it will become obsessed with it, and that's what you want. You want to live by magnificent obsessions that you can see clearly in front of you on a daily basis. And again, specificity rules the world. Focus always precedes success.
Well, what about some of my listeners who might be searching for their purpose or searching for their destiny? I get asked the question all the time, what was I put here on earth to do? How can they begin to really discover and walk in their purpose and their destiny?
Well, I think we all have that in some way, and we end up going on this safari of life, and we go in different directions. But I think one of the important things is to take some time to really investigate what you're good at. And by that I mean every talent that you are blessed with, you already have. You will not get another ounce of talent. So talent is given to you at conception, and you were blessed with this combination of genetic material from all of the relatives that you've ever had, mother and father and all the way back. So as early as possible with ourselves and our children, we need to uncover those seeds of greatness. And the way you do that is by either watching your own children at play and what they love and what makes them laugh and all of those things, or in my case, I had to go back to grammar school, junior high, and high school and think about it. Here I was, a nuclear weapons delivery pilot, military, on my way to become an admiral, maybe, if I kept my nose clean. But instead, what was nagging at me is that was not my purpose. My purpose was not necessarily to be a warrior and to fight, although I would, for my country and my family. But I had to go back and say, wait a minute. As a little boy, my library card was more important than a MasterCard. Wait a minute. As a little boy, it was always poetry and words and songs and music and helping and speaking. And then I realized in high school, creative writing. I stood at the top of the class in English, at the bottom of the class in math, and so on. And then I realized that people, helping people, was my purpose. Now, even if it's as general as that, then you have to go back and say, well, what have I indicated in the things that I've done in the past, especially on weekends, especially at night, especially when they haven't forced me to do it? especially when it wasn't my teacher, my parents, or my boss that was telling me what I needed to do, but what would I do if time were available, if circumstances would allow, and if money were not an object? What would I do with my life? And for me, it came, well, I would write and speak and help. And that's the way you do it, the way you do. And of course, you need to do that with your children, because no matter how much you want your children to either be better than you or do what you would like them to do, they are, as Gibran said, they are not your children. They are the children of tomorrow, a house that you may not even enter, not even for a moment. So they are the sons and daughters of the things to come. So what I've tried to do with my children, maybe I've made a lot of mistakes like every parent, but I've tried to help and encourage them to find their destiny in what they love to do and what they're good at, because you will do more of what you like than what you need. You will always do more of what you like than what you need. On the weekends, you'll unhook from what you need and do what you like. And that's why I think it's important to dust off your childhood fantasies, your natural gifts. And there is, Constance, there are only two organizations in the United States that test you for those talents. One of them is the Ball Foundation, just like a football, Ball Foundation in Chicago, Johnson O'Connor Foundation in New York, both nonprofit, don't advertise, 17 offices, and they, for about $500 or so, will, for a child 14 and up, and for anybody who's in a transition in their life, will discover which of the 19 talents that we have identified you were blessed with when you were born. And if you have those, at least you can use them for hobby, public service, for fun, but more importantly, you probably can integrate them into your profession.
Right. And, you know, speaking of transition, these are very interesting times globally. What can you share with some of my listeners who may have been downsized? They may be right in the middle of a crisis or transition. What can they begin to do to turn their lives around?
Well, I think, first of all, they do have to understand that the playing field is not level, and that no matter what we say about China and the developing nations, that it makes sense. When you're hungry in the belly, you're hungry in the mind. So as ever, the hungriest in the belly is likely to be hungry in the mind. So the Chinese have been watching what we have, and they want what we have. And so they want a swimming pool. A Chinese swimming pool in Beijing has over 2,000 people in it, and they have to ring a bell for the people to get in and out of the pool so they can get a piece of the water. And there are so many people that they want to be able to invest in paradise, and they see us as paradise. So they work harder. It's true, they're more regimented. Their children have to study harder, and there's more of them. And what they do is, if they can't get into Beijing or Shanghai University, they come over and get into our universities and ones in Australia and England. So the key is, you must be learning and leading or getting trampled or falling behind. So you must constantly future-proof yourself, which means whether it's Fast Company magazine or PC or getting your internet skills up. But certainly, unless you're networking, you will be not working. Unless you're online, you'll be in some kind of breadline. So you must get your networking skills, because it's very true. The value of Facebook would not be as great if it weren't the secret of social and professional networking. We know that Facebook and Yahoo and Google and MySpace and YouTube are, as Microsoft says, unless you're in the clouds with cloud computing, and unless you have a huge network globally that you can deal with, that you can talk to people outside of your own neighborhood, that you must look at the world as your neighborhood, and you must not be afraid to do business across lines. And even if you're not proficient in their language, there's software now that can translate English into the other languages. So I'd give you a couple of points. One, make sure you're reading the books that talk about innovation, the magazines that talk about vision and the future. make sure that the internet programs that you're, whatever you're surfing on the net, make sure that it's something that is a breakthrough, what's happening, because every 5 minutes there's a new technological breakthrough. And so what you don't want to do is be caught in the past. You don't want to be caught in the Royal typewriter when everyone is already leaping toward texting. So I know a lot of people say, well, I just don't understand that stuff, and I'll let somebody else do it. Well, in order for you to be able to talk to your children and grandchildren, you need to be friendly, because you don't want them having to program your DVR or DVD.
Right.
For you. It's that kind of thing. So I think for me, it's being a lifelong learner. It's reading everything I can get my hands on, reading fiction to stimulate my imagination and my vocabulary, read nonfiction to find out what's going on, especially biographies of people who've overcome enormous obstacles to become successful. Because the minute you start reading biographies, you say, wait a minute, that person is no better than me. Look what they went through and look what they did, and I don't have to go through quite as much. And so it does motivate you to know that other people are overcoming the same kind of things with the job market and with being unemployed. So again, if you've recently become unemployed, do not go down to the bar and sit with other people who also have been fired or downsized. Always congregate with people who are in the process of succeeding by having a new job or a new idea, or they're getting their resume out, or they're looking on these websites that offer positions. You just constantly got to do that, because remember, as good as the best, no better than the rest, but I'm worth investing in. You know, you have to say that. I'm worth the effort. I'm worth my effort, and so I'll put the effort in. Because people will say, oh my gosh, you got to be kidding. Why bother? And then you say, well, because I'm worth it.
Right.
That's not being conceited. It just means that I need to keep investing in me.
And so, Dr. Whaley, where do you see yourself? What is God or Spirit having you to do over the next couple of years? And then how can my listeners get all of your great products and services and information?
Well, you know, I see myself in the Indian summer of my life. It's so funny. when I was speaking in England, somebody said, oh, we have Dennis Whaley with us, one of the poet laureates of motivational speakers. The rest of them are dead. It was like a Don Rickles kind of thing. And then they said, oh, Dennis, gosh, we saw your album, Psychology of Winning, in a window on the way to the theater. And I said, really? They said, yes, it was in a museum. No, I loved it. I loved it because I realized that I don't want to be part of the past. I want to be part of the future. So I'm going to hang around young people. I'm going to learn how to communicate with the Gen XYZ generation, and see if I can come up with a way to have little internet bites, downloadable bites, that will fit into their way of learning and texting and be of some value with timeless material for the next generation, that right now, since they're not listening to tapes and so they're not reading these big books, what would they read? What would they watch? What would they listen to that would be goal-achieving rather than just tension-relieving? So I'm going to try to dip down into that, try to write a few more things, and to help as many young people as I can in addition to my family. And so it's just I don't want to watch the ships go by. I want to be fishing on the ship.
Oh, that's so awesome. And we have about 5 minutes left. What would be some parting words or insight that you would like to leave to listeners who are listening to you right now all over the world?
Well, I think one of them would be that we have to be very careful when we watch the news, because I found myself once in a while getting hooked on some of the news. But when I realize, and I do realize, that bad news sells. I do know that a conflagration or a shooting or fire or tornadoes or hurricanes are things, disasters, that although, and the reason that people watch them is not so much that they're going to help these people, because, you know, in Taiwan was what, you know, Taiwan and maybe 9-11 was a good example in our country when everyone stopped doing what they were doing, and especially in New York, and they went to help those who had the problem. In Taiwan, when there was a big earthquake, everyone on their way to work in business suits and ties and shirts turned their car around and drove to that area of the problem and then helped move the boulders and the rubble. So they were all buying in to a solution rather than being riveted to the television with the problem. And here's why. Since bad news sells, since ratings are based on shock, since shock value, like the new TV series Skins, and the only reason that people put on shows like that is to shock the public, to get the young viewers viscerally involved, and to make more money. So bad news makes more money. And once you realize that bad news sells and good news is elevator music, you need to be a person who says, wait a minute, I'm always going to be subjected to the bad news, and I'm going to be a good news purveyor. I'm going to learn the bad news so that I can protect my family and my neighbors. I'm going to be available to help people in need, but I'm going to focus on what I can do to make it better rather than wallow in the problem that I see, because it's so easy to say, wow, I'm glad that didn't happen to me, or can you believe them, or can you believe how totally absurd and impossible. People love the idea that other people, fallen idols, celebrities who get caught doing something, it makes them glad they weren't the victim of the day, and it makes them feel good regardless of what they're doing. We don't need to do that to live by comparison. What we need to do is be the good news people instead of the bad news pass along.
Well, Dr. Dennis Whateley, what can I say? You've been such a blessing. You're a living legend. You're an icon, but you're such a humble man, and I'm really grateful for you taking the time from your beautiful condo in Mexico to share with listeners all over the world. And I personally just want to thank you and just want to say to you, God bless you, and keep changing our lives with those great books and those great tapes and anything that you can share that would really help us to take us to the next level. I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Constance, and I wish you only the best, and I know that you're going to attract to you all the abundance because you are really a steward leader rather than somebody who just wants it for herself.
Thank you. Well, this is Constance Arnold with the Think, Believe, and Manifest Talk Show. Thank you so much for joining me. And remember, God bless you and the best is yet to come.
Thanks for joining us today on Think, Believe, and Manifest. We'll be back next week with another great show. For more information, go to FulfillingYourPurpose.com.